As we heard in the headlines there from our Northern editor, Vincent Carney, the DUP has this morning confirmed that it will not nominate a speaker for the new Stormont Assembly, which will effectively block its formation. This, of course, comes after the party had already said that it would not nominate a Deputy First Minister until their dispute over the Northern Ireland Protocol is resolved. I'm joined now by newly elected Alliance MLA for North Antrim, Patricia O'Lynn, also on the line, Ben Lowry, editor of the Belfast Newsletter, and in studio with us, Neil Richmond of Fine Gael TD. Good morning to all of you. Ben, can I start with you, please? Take us through the choreography of what's going to happen today and in the next couple of weeks.
Well, what would have happened today would have been the election of a speaker. And the election of a speaker is significant because once there is a speaker in place, it will it's possible for there to be, for Stormont not to be sitting normally, not for there to be a normal executive, but to function. And today what the DUP is saying is that they are not going to nominate, which means that it won't have cross-community support, which means that it will be essentially, it is from the what the DUP is doing is saying that it can't be business as usual, because it is saying that the UK government promised to legislate with respect to the Irish Sea border, the Northern Ireland Protocol, is approaching a year ago.
And what kind of government does that leave Northern Ireland with then? Is it basically the civil service running the show?
Yeah, well, there are ministers who you know, can oversee things, but there won't be scrutiny of it from the Assembly. It's a sort of hovering Assembly for 6 months before there would have to be another election. It used to. This is actually legislation that was changed last time as a result of the 3-year suspension of Stormont when Sinn Féin pulled it down over the renewable heat incentive, and then kept it down until there was an Irish Language Act, which is actually one of the things that is coming through, or the government has said that in the Queen's speech that will be coming through, the Irish Language Act. So it's a longer period of hiatus until there would be a return to normality, okay, potentially.
Geoffrey Donaldson has released a statement this morning. How does he justify these actions?
What he's saying is, well, an interesting shift, you could say, in unionist arguments is that now they cite minority protections, they cite the need for cross-community consent for key issues, and citing what I was saying there about the fact that the government has said that it would act, but also citing the Belfast Agreement, effectively, that more and more...
Sorry, just before you go on, Ben, is that interesting to you because they're using the language of being a minority since losing the election?
Well, I think they have moved towards talking about minority protections because the unionists lost a majority 5 years ago. Unionism makes the point that it is still the largest designation, both in terms of MLAs and the largest in terms of number of votes, 42% if you add up all the small candidates, nationalism on 40% if you add up all the small candidates. And for 25 years, nationalism hasn't moved very much. Unionism has come down, so the difference between the two has narrowed. Nationalism hasn't advanced. What's advanced is the centre ground. So, yes, it is interesting that they are using that language. It is probably, you know, in the century of Northern Ireland, unionists have not talked in that way. It is also interesting, of course, the DUP citing the Belfast Agreement, which they opposed, and Geoffrey Donaldson famously left the Ulster Unionist Party over the Belfast Agreement. It was several years after it. What he says, we have this, and it is in today's paper that we broke the fact that they weren't nominating a speaker. He says, and I quote, "The protocol is a direct challenge to the principles that have underpinned every agreement reached in Northern Ireland over the last 25 years. It erodes the very foundations that devolution has been built upon." There is a very strong feeling within unionism that double standards operate. I mean, I cited earlier the bringing down of Stormont by Sinn Féin, and it was kept down for 3 years until an Irish Language Act was maintained. The DUP would say it hasn't done something so radical as that, and that the Irish sea border, the Northern Ireland Protocol, is a major issue of constitutional significance, whereas an Irish Language Act isn't. And also the...
Well, of more significance to his community, perhaps, would be the better way of putting it. But let me...
I'm just citing the unionist view, but I'm trying to explain.
Okay, well, let me put to you what I think is the big head scratcher for most people, and that is Geoffrey Donaldson's position and what he said during the course of the election campaign about taking up his seat. He was asked by the BBC's Jim Fitzpatrick very, very explicitly, if elected, can you guarantee that you will take your Stormont seat? This was his answer.
Well, I wouldn't be standing as a candidate leading my party into this election if it wasn't my intention to lead my party into the Assembly.
Your intention doesn't quite sound like a guarantee that you will take your seat.
Because,
will you take
your seat? Unlike you, I don't take the electorate for granted. I will fight for every vote.
No, I'm asking if you win your seat at the Assembly, will you take that seat?
Of course. I am committed to leading the DUP into an executive, but we must deal with the issues that are in front of us. We must deal with the protocol.
That's quite a hostage to fortune. Does it leave Geoffrey Donaldson with a credibility problem?
I think in that clip he was clearly reluctant to commit himself to taking a seat, because for a long time the DUP has known that if he was to take a seat and stand down from Westminster and then Stormont didn't happen, that would be a difficult position. There's a double jobbing ban in Northern Ireland, which is a relatively recent thing, actually. You can't even be a councillor as well as a member of Stormont, and you certainly can't be a member of Stormont and a member of Parliament at Westminster. So I think that, yes, of course, I mean, in terms of credibility, that is a difficult thing for him to defend, and there was a reluctance, as I was saying, for him to make that commitment. But I think if we are realistic, practically, about the leader of a party, and there has been turmoil in terms of actually all the parties, the unionist parties in particular, but all of the parties have moved about their leaders, and sometimes fairly rapidly. There has been a turmoil, and if the DUP leader was not in, it was in a parliament that didn't exist and not a Westminster, that would be a problem for the whole process. I think even the governments, the two governments, would recognise that.
We had hoped to have somebody from the DUP on the programme, but unfortunately scheduling conflicts this morning prevented that from happening. Patricia O'Lynn of the Alliance Party does join us, though, this morning. Patricia, what's your reaction to what's happened?
I'm completely disgusted by what's taken place this morning. I think it's completely reprehensible and unconscionable that the DUP would not go ahead and enable the Assembly to function. This morning when the news broke, I have had constituents on the phone non-stop. I've had people extremely distressed, people who have been waiting on hospital waiting lists for more than 5 years on operations, one of which is my own partner. I have people in distress about the cost of living crisis and wondering how they're going to make it through to the end of the week. It is completely unfair and unacceptable that the DUP would hold the country to ransom in this way.
And Patricia, you would have canvassed in unionist or loyalist areas, I presume. How often did the protocol come up?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm really glad that you raised that point, because we were out almost five times a week, knocking thousands of doors. And the only time the protocol was brought up was once to me on one door. That was it. The issues that people
only
are facing.
Only once? Are you serious?
Once in the entire campaign.
So what
That's
was it? Cost of living was top of the agenda, was it?
Cost of living was top of the agenda, followed by healthcare, followed by education, and then access to employment and sustainable
jobs.
Okay,
but I presume that the DUP would say that the cost of living is being aggravated by issues arising from the administration of the protocol.
I'm sure they would, and it would be very convenient for them to argue so, but that's not necessarily the case. The executive is not sitting, so money cannot be distributed. There are things that we can do. We have a cost of living paper within the Alliance Party, and indeed across other parties. And I believe that it was part of the DUP manifesto going forward in this election that we would address the cost of living crisis. We cannot do that while we don't have an executive or an assembly functioning.
Can I impose a cost of living crisis on you and your colleagues? Should you be taking salaries if you're not sitting?
I absolutely think we should be taking the salaries. And the reason is there are people who have been in the assembly who have been working from Sunday night, actually not just from Monday morning, with their sleeves rolled up, out in the constituency, ready to work, get into business right across Northern Ireland. We are advocating that the people who are not enabling the assembly to sit and who are blocking process to be made are not paid their salaries, because this is like any other workplace. We report to the public. And what other workplace?
Okay, is that not going to aggravate an inflamed? Is that not going to aggravate an already inflamed situation by suggesting the DUP lose their salaries but you keep yours?
I don't think that it will. I think that's a fair approach to what's actually happening at the minute. In no other workplace would this be accepted. In no other workplace would the entire workforce be penalised for a small group of people who are blocking progress and being made and not doing their job.
Neil Richmond, let me come to you. Your reaction to this move from the DUP?
Well, firstly, Philip, can I congratulate Nuala on her election and thank Ben for his coverage over
Patricia,
the last week.
Patricia O'Lynn
and Nuala McAllister were two very significant gains for the Alliance Party. The reaction to the DUP move is one of utter disappointment and indeed disgust, because it's not going to achieve anything. We've seen the DUP do this countless times over the last 6 years. This is the party that pushed Brexit the hardest in Northern Ireland. Indeed, we're involved in the campaign across the UK. And every time a solution has been proposed to the problems caused by Brexit, not by the protocol, they've said no. Constantly said no. And now, I'll be quite frank, they're clearly being used by the Tory party once again. You have Liz Truss, for whatever internal reasons, leaking to the media, putting out very inflammatory statements, trying to garner support for a grassroots base for a government that has been struggling domestically in England, nothing to do with Northern Ireland, for the last number of weeks. And unfortunately, the people of Northern Ireland, unionist, nationalist, and the very large other that Patricia and others represent are being held hostage of fortune.
Okay, so, not to put too fine a point on it, are you saying that the Irish government's analysis here is that Ireland is once again collateral damage in a Tory party leadership contest?
Well, that's certainly my analysis. And what has been said by the Minister for Foreign Affairs and others this week is that trust is at a very low point with the British government. Because sadly, as throughout this process, we've seen something that is about the UK and the EU and it's about partnership has come down to the internal dynamics of Westminster. And it's having a massively negative effect on the politics of Northern Ireland. It's interesting because the protocol is actually having a very positive effect on the economy in Northern Ireland, which is going much further and succeeding much better than the rest of the UK, despite the very many global challenges. But we are at an impasse again. And I think the EU presented proposals in October, and we have a British foreign minister saying they're not good enough. Now you've 72 hours to respond again.
Hang on a second. I mean, Conor Burns said, in the United States, that what we hope for here is that Ursula von der Leyen will extend Mara Sefcovic's mandate so that we can take more issues into the negotiations. They didn't reject everything out of hand.
Well, Liz Truss did. And she's had it quite bluntly, the 72 years, what they proposed in October, which was based on engagement with Mara Sefcovic, with the actual business leaders and farm leaders in Northern Ireland, the sort of legislation that the EU has already made that will ensure access for Northern Ireland to GB medicines that takes away 80% of checks. What Conor Burns said in America, and he held up a big wad of paper on the news, is directly due to the actions of his government. They've sought the hardest possible Brexit, and in typical political fashion that we're all getting a little bit peeved with over the last 6 years, they've said, let's blame Brussels. Let's say that Brussels needs to move and show some sort of movement. The British government have made no movement.
We've seen this tactic before from them, though, haven't we? If they indeed are using the same play from the same playbook again, they'll huff and they'll puff, they'll stare you directly in the eyes and demand more, and they get more. It works for them.
How do they get more? Let's compare the protocol to the backstop. The backstop said that the UK as a whole would remain in a customs union, a single market, something that the European Commission originally proposed. But then the protocol came and said, no, let's just make it Northern Ireland. There has to be checks going into Northern Ireland. So what the UK did is they didn't advance their cause. They actually went back on their cause. They tore up Theresa May's deal, which was perfectly acceptable. She put this to Geoffrey Donaldson in the House of Commons this week. They haven't got more. But with the European Commission and the European Union as a wider entity, including Ireland, has been trying to do throughout this process with partners in the US, Canada, Japan and other countries, is to put quite clearly to the UK, you've made a decision, a really bad decision in Brexit. There are consequences. You have to live with those consequences. We want to ameliorate them as best possible. But it's very difficult to do that with a government led by the hardest of Brexiteers who either don't have a very good understanding of the intricacies of Northern Irish politics or wider international trade, because they think everything comes down to the internal politics of Westminster and indeed the Tory party leadership.
Ben, do you think that unionism shares even one single point of Neil's and the Irish government's analysis there, that this is about an internal power struggle within the Tory party and that once that is resolved, unionism is going to be thrown under the bus again?
Well, I think that what the election did show was there is essentially there are a lot of unionist positions. Broadly, there are three. There's a Liberal Unionist Party that actually did rather well. Some of the figures are misleading. The Ulster Unionist Party still always gets 100,000 votes. There's 100,000 people. Northern Ireland standards, that's a lot of people that don't go to the Alliance Party. The DUP, obviously, mainstream party. And Jim Allister's traditional unionist voice, hardline party, got almost 8%. That's more than the Alliance Party got for most of the last 25 years.
I know, but not a very transfer-friendly party.
So So, sorry, yes, in answer to your question, do they? There is, of course, a wariness of the Conservative Party. There is, of course, a wariness of Boris Johnson. He came to Belfast in 2018. We know the history there. At the moment, the government is talking from a union's perspective, saying the right things. I spoke to somebody in the DUB before I came on here just to check the latest thinking, and they are saying that, I mean, they really don't know what's going to happen and when. And they are saying that, you know, there are a few fundamental things that have to happen, one of which is there has to be an end to checks and paperwork for stuff that is only staying in Northern Ireland. They also want, this is the more difficult thing, that Northern Ireland not to be subject to EU single market rules. But, yeah, I think that I genuinely think they don't know what the government's doing. I wonder whether the government, I think, looking at it, the government, because it is in a difficult position, it's dealing with a lot of different issues, it has different factions within it, is not yet sure what it's going to do.
Well, in the meantime, the rest of us just have to watch this space. Ben Lowry, thank you very much, Patricia O'Lynn and Neil Richmond. Coming up after the break, how, at ground level, is the war in Ukraine now being prosecuted?
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.